Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Now we're going to get to our picks at the end of the show. Between now and then, Jody McDonald will talk about the Eagles. Really? We have a lot of questions. He can, of course, answer those questions. And then Adam Rittenberg. A lot going on. A lot. So there you go. Okay? It's all at here in the show today. Bill O'Brien's the new offensive coordinator at Ohio State. You know, and of course, there'll be, oh my goodness, how could he go there? So for goodness sakes, the job. Okay? So, Brian Hartline's going to remain the wide receivers coach and the co-offensive coordinator. O'Brien will be the quarterback's coach. Corey Dennis is going to transition to another part of the program. And of course, Dennis happens to be Urban Meyer's son-in-law. And that's fine. I mean, but Bill's allowed to go out and get jobs, you know. I mean, it just turns out that it's Ohio State. He's allowed to go get jobs. Are you supposed to not take the job? Because it's a rival of Penn State? Like, really? It's fine. They had an opening. He applied. Got it. Next. And everybody knows how much I like Bill. So I'm not going to sit there and start like going through. You can't do that, right? The personal relationships mean exponentially more to me than stuff like this. I mean, way more. I just want what's best for he and Colleen and the boys. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see Ryan Day. How much does he give up personally when it comes to play calling?
Steve,
what was your reaction?
Steve, we have Adam on the line.
Oh, we have Adam now. I thought he was 205. Sorry.
No, he's 105. Sorry, buddy.
Okay, that's okay.
All right.
Adam, how are you today? It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm good. Steve, just listening to your commentary, just like a listener today. So good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. What did you think when you heard that Bill got the Ohio State job, and what do you think that means on Ryan Day's mindset?
Well, I think I talked to Ryan last week at the coaches' convention in Nashville, and he realizes that it's time to back away from the play calling and the offensive operation and be more of a CEO as he enters what we all agree is a pivotal season. So you know, he wanted to find somebody who certainly he'd be comfortable with, but also he did mention NFL to me as where he may look for a coordinator. So it makes sense. You know, Bill O'Brien, who spent most of his career in the NFL, but obviously had time at Penn State, but also other college stops early on, kind of fits the mold of what Ryan Day wanted. I think what's going to be very interesting is just how they work together. and where Bill O'Brien can take the offense that maybe, you know, they weren't getting there with Ryan Day and Brian Hartline and some of the personnel. I mean, this is a very, very talented offense that's returning, but one that has some question marks. You know, most notably, you know, is Will Howard the answer at quarterback?
Right.
They have a running back tandem that I think is going to be the best in college football going into the season with Travion Henderson and then Quinshon Judkins coming in from Ole Miss. You know, Mecca Ibuka is back at receiver. But, you know, it's a group that ultimately, you know, couldn't score enough in the most important game of the season and was really decimated in their bowl game. So definitely some growth needed for the Buckeye offensive line.
You talked about the coaches' convention. Adam, what were your takeaways from the coaches' convention that you feel, after listening to certain people, can move the game forward?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, though. Are they going to be listened to? I mean, the
right.
coaches have their opinions. Oftentimes, they come off as complaining. But one thing that was consistent to me in talking to them last week is that they believe they forecasted a lot of the challenges in college football. I don't say problems because that's their word, and I'm not saying that they're all problems, but I think the coaches believe they saw a lot of what's happening now coming, and by not being listened to, and maybe their ideas didn't go far enough, there have been some real challenges around the sport, especially regarding the portal and NIL. So, you know, one they all have ideas as far as the calendar and how it needs to change. I think one thing that they came out with is that they want the signing date, the early signing date, to be before the opening of the transfer portal. Right now it's not, and there's some real consequences to having that sequence the way it is. I think they think a 30-day total window for the portal is better than a 45-day window, but there's all sorts of ideas, Steve. I mean, a prominent Power 5 coach said his plan would be to get rid of the early signing date, but essentially make it that Wednesday, February, whatever it is, signing date would be open for a calendar year beginning with high school juniors. So those who have completed their junior year could begin signing for a full calendar year until the February of their senior year. So that was a different idea I heard. And they're all over the place in terms of ideas, but there's certainly a desire to you know, make changes to the way it is right now because it has been so hectic.
Hypothetically, if they move the early signing period before the transfer portal open, could that lead to more firings in season?
For sure. And although we, you know, this year we did not see that a whole lot. Last year we saw a lot of early firings. Now I think part of that was circumstantial, and you had a number of coaches who, you know, were entering their seasons with very little chance to keep their job, you know, like a Clay Helton a couple of years ago, or last year, you know, you looked at Scott Frost and, you know, Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, and Herm Edwards at Arizona State, Brian Harsin at Auburn. You know, those were all seen as jobs that were almost for sure going to open. I think we could see that this year, potentially. You look at Billy Napier at Florida, you know, Dave Aranda at Baylor, Sam Pittman at Arkansas. You know, if they don't get off to good starts, I think you could see changes made relatively early to try to get ahead of that next portal cycle. So I think part of it's the way it is now because of the calendar, but part of it's also the individual circumstances.
Charlie Baker made some interesting proposals before all of this happened, some of it dealing with NIL, others with the portal. Were any of those ideas discussed at the coaches' convention? And if so, what was the reception to at least the thought process?
Yeah, I think they were discussed. I think there's, you know, still some frustration with the NCAA in terms of you know, speed in acting to create change. But I think there's an excitement that at least the head of the NCAA is thinking about this in a realistic way, that not all schools are the same, and that you know, some type of controls around NIL can be beneficial. So I think that there's a desire to really push some of these things through as quickly as possible. But and also just recognizing the realities that, you know, some programs are just going to be better equipped than others in the NIL environment. But they all want some level of control. I mean, coaches, as you know, want control, and they don't feel like there's any control right now over especially NIL. They have been relatively pleased with the transfer windows. But like I said, they want those to be even tighter than they are right now.
Okay, so we are also entering the new era of the 12-team playoff and a new era of 18 teams in the Big Ten. Don't teach your children through college football. They're 18 in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And 16 in the SEC. How interested are you in how this is going to work out? And is there an excitement level to it or an interest level to it for you?
Oh, I think there's excitement. I mean, again, I don't love an 18-team Big Ten because I think you lose some of the things that make conferences unique. But we're past that point, right? I mean, you know, conferences are not what they were when we were growing up or when we entered the sport. And that just is what it is. You can wring your hands about it. You can pine for the old days, but this is not where we are right now. I am very excited for the 12-team playoff, and I've advocated for a bigger playoff for a number of years, and I've done so in a sense of it's not to create more possible national champions. It would be great if a team that squeaks in as the 11th seed or the 10th seed wins four games in a row to win a national championship. The odds of that happening are not great. But the fact that those teams are going to be part of the CFP and you're going to have games on campus and you're going to have more inclusivity and it's going to be a truly national playoff, those are all good things for the sport. That's how it exists in virtually every other sport but college football. And so that part of it is going to be really exciting. And I think it creates all sorts of interesting conversations like, you know, what if Ryan Day loses to Michigan again but makes the college football playoff and wins a national title? How do you feel about him at that point? Or reaches a national title game? You know, how much more is that a barometer for Penn State that, you know, would have been in the college football playoff if it had been larger over the last 10 years or so, but hasn't made it yet at four teams? When is that the standard for James Franklin and Penn State in most seasons? I think there's a few programs that really should realistically expect to make the playoff every year, but there's a much larger group of programs that should anticipate at least having a chance to make the playoff every once in a while, or, you know, two out of every 5 years, or whatever you want to call a metric. So that part is really exciting to me.
I mean, you can argue that year one, when Ohio State is a four beat Alabama as a one, is the biggest upset in the four-team playoff era. You can make that argument. One thing about, for example, you know, USC's coming in, Andy Enfield, but he coached at Florida Gulf Coast, and they beat Georgetown and San Diego State, got to the Sweet 16. Did they win the national title? No. How important do you think for the excitement level is that somewhere along the line, Air Force, for example, goes out and they beat a USC in round one for whatever reason? What would that mean to college football just to even have that? Not Air Force winning at all because they're not going to, but to even do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how valuable home field is in that first round, or even how valuable not playing in your conference championship game could be in that first round, because you'd have extra time to rest and prepare for the game. So of those four first-round games, are those four home wins, or are those three home wins? Are we going to see some upsets? I mean, that's certainly exciting, but I think it's very unrealistic to expect anyone who's in that first round to run the table and win a national title. Not saying it can't happen, but it's a very difficult task to win, you know, four postseason games in football in a relatively, I mean, you're talking about a month span. The first round of the playoff, I believe this next year is December 20th, and then the national championship game is January 20th. So you're talking about four games in a month span at the very highest level, traveling around the country. That's asking a lot. So my anticipation is that most of the national champions, and that's again what makes it exciting and why you want to be a top four seed, because your chances of winning a national championship go way up.
Which brings us to the next part, and that is what happens with Florida State. In these days, to be a writer or to come on shows like these, you have to somehow talk to somebody who has a legal background. So what is the grasp that you have to this point on Florida State versus the ACC?
Right. Well, again, not surprised that Florida State was the first ACC team that challenged the grant of rights openly and has made it very clear that it wants to explore its options outside of the league. I still think most of the legal interpretations are on the ACC side, namely that Florida State agreed to this grant of rights. Its representatives signed it back in 2016, and the ACC has that information. So it'll be fascinating to see, obviously, where the legal cases go, and you know how different judges interpret some of Florida State's arguments. I just don't think that it's realistic to expect Florida State to be in the ACC for 10 more years, or right. I guess we're looking at 12 more. You know how these things go. I mean, if you want to get divorced, you're really going to stay in a separation or an unhappy situation for 4, 8, 12 years. I just don't think that's going to happen. You saw it even with the Texas and Oklahoma moving out of the Big 12 earlier. I think you can typically get to a point where, again, an expensive point, but a point where the two sides can kind of go their separate ways.
Right, and exactly. And Florida State not only signed it once, they signed it twice. I mean, that's what's interesting about this, because they signed that thing two different times along the way. When you look at the landscape of college football now, for the moment, TV contracts are settled, except for the college football playoff contract. Outside of Florida State, is there the possibility of stabilization for at least a couple of years?
Well, I think it's possible, because the ACC, or sorry, the Big 12 is now set with who's going to be in that league. There obviously is the possibility that they look to add more from what's left of the Pac-12. That would obviously be Oregon State and Washington State, but I don't think any existing Big Ten or SEC teams are going anywhere. So all eyes, again, are on the ACC and to see where this thing goes, because you're naive if you don't think Clemson is going to do the same thing as Florida State, and maybe North Carolina and Miami and Virginia and some of those other reported teams that are at least exploring this would follow suit. This is a copycat enterprise, a copycat landscape, and so that's where the attention is. But I don't sense that there's going to be other movement other than, if we can get to a point where there's this, football breakaway in a super league, and these are the teams that are part of that, and it'll be fascinating to see, where that cutoff is. And if every existing Big Ten and SEC team is, essentially grandfathered into that league, or if there are cutoffs within those conferences, and if there are other teams that are outside of those two leagues that would be part of it. Obviously Clemson, Florida State, those types of programs would have to be part of a super league, but who else makes it and who doesn't would be very interesting.
Tim Murphy retired. You did a nice article about him. What does a guy like that mean to the game after 30 years at Harvard?
It's kind of amazing. I mean, 30 years at one program, and just reading about how Harvard had really not had much success for the previous 50, 60 years before he arrived, then started winning Ivy League titles and 10 Ivy League titles, tied for the most in history of that league, and certainly the number of 8+ win seasons, the record against Yale. Certainly, you talk about Nick Saban being the greatest coach in college football history. I think you could look at Tim Murphy, at least in modern Harvard history, given their realities and where they belong in the current college football landscape, is sort of being their greatest coach.
Always a pleasure, Adam. Thanks so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
All right, great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN. There we go. Next half hour, Jody McDonald. Jody Mack on the show. And go from there. Talk about the Eagles. Are you sure you want to get into the Eagle thing?
I like to poke the bear sometimes.
I mean, I don't want to depress the passengers.
There is interest in this.
Yes, there is. We'll do that in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studios. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Any opportunity I get to spend some time with Jody McDonald, I relish. And it's great to have Jody Mack back on the show today. Sir, welcome back.
I do not have him yet, Steve.
Okay, no problem. We will wait then. It was a great intro, though.
It was. It was a good one.
But we'll get him in a moment. You see what they did at Sports Illustrated, Todd?
I did. I was not excited about that.
No, that's bad for sports journalism. And, of course, Neil Coolongs with SI.com, Mark Wogenrich with SI.com. I'm talking about friends, good friends, great people.
I didn't realize that, you know, those guys worked for it. Just because I'm not sure I realized that they had a separate Penn State and Steelers thing now.
Well, I mean, and that's what they were doing with it, at least on that part of it. I mean, I'm going to text Neil and Mark and see, like, you know, make sure everybody's okay or go from there. But and that's just a low day for sports journalism. And the reason it's a low day for sports journalism, and maybe this is the older person in me coming out, you know, but I like to sit down and read an article, you know, long form, from good writers, which they have terrific writers, and we're now in an era of hot takes, and hot takes can be entertaining, obviously. They wouldn't go that direction unless they thought it was working to get people to listen to them or watch them. But I'm not big on hot takes. That's just me. And I talked to my broadcasting class about that. I said, you know, show up at the table with some meat and potatoes.
You know, you talked about wanting to sit down, and I think that's one of the things that's missing now without the magazines like Sports Illustrated and ESPN and Inside Sports and Sport, is just some of the long-form articles on some of these guys where you kind of get to know them a little bit and humanize them a little more. And that's, I think that's one of the things that we've kind of lost with, you know, the teams kind of taken over the control of information, you know, with team websites and league websites kind of being more involved in this. And it I think we're losing a little bit journalistically and just, you know, knowing the human side of some of these guys.
What do you like to write? Do you like to write games? Do you like to write features? Do you like to do an in-depth on somebody? What element of this do you really enjoy when you get the opportunity to do it?
I think right now it's basically game stories. Just, you know, like everybody else, we're you know, there's not as many people around, and, you know, newspapers don't have enough. You know, the only time I really get to write feature stories is we do a separate section every Friday on high school football during the high school football season. So I have to come up with a story every week for that, and I enjoy that part. But, you know, right now, like everything else, is just finding enough time to do some of this stuff. And, you know, mostly right now it's game stories.
What is the greatest challenge that you're facing in the industry right now?
Honestly, figuring out a way to reach younger people. You know, our circulation, you know, is older, quite older. You don't hear much from a lot of people other than older people right now. And we have to figure out a way to get people interested in the, you know, the biggest thing the worst mistake the newspapers ever did was not figuring out a way to monetize the internet 25 years ago when they decided to give everything away free.
Yes.
And now it's kind of trying to put everything back into the bag and try it, and it's just something that's never been solved.
Yeah, and it has not been solved along the way, and it's set your entire industry back. And it must be frustrating for you that you thought this 25 years ago and you watched it play out in real time.
Well, and it's, you know, it goes back to kind of the point you and Adam were making, that, you know, the coaches have ideas, the coaches are on the front lines of it, and nobody listens to the coaches, and it's kind of the same thing. You know, if you're down in the trenches, you kind of know what's going on, but, you know, if nobody above you is has their pulse to that and doesn't figure it out, you know, you're at the whims of corporate America at the most part.
What is the best story that, above all, you enjoyed writing more than any other? Tough question.
That is a tough question. I really do like doing the feature stories on the football players, and we do some of these Athlete of the Week stories just because, you know, if you... A game story, it's a lot of time. It's, you know, 2 minutes with a kid and you're out. And, you know, like, for example, our cover story this week was on a Southern Columbia defensive player, Isaac Carter, who played soccer and football this season for 1 year and would like to go into, is hoping for, he got the appointment from the Senators, I'm not sure if it's through West Point, but he had goals of West Point, and, you know, he's been it's one of those things, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, WVIA did an hour and 10 minute documentary on their season last year.
Yeah.
And it's something, if he was such a joyful kid, and you know, they just all of a sudden, he started playing football as a junior, and he's, you know, he's legitimately, you know, if he plays 4 years and plays like that for 4 years, he's probably a low level Division I kid on the defensive line, but he just was a soccer player. And it's just a chance to get, I don't want to say closer because that sounds a little weird, but just learn a little bit more, you know, about these kids and kind of what makes them tick, because everybody, you know, you sound like an old man when you complain about the youth of America, but I think if you're around the kids these days, I think you'll realize the kids are all right, and, you know, that you know, it's just a matter of, you know, we don't have a way to communicate as much through newspapers to get that through, and I don't think the kids have as many ways to communicate to adults that, you know, that they are, you know, that they understand what's going on and things of that nature.
Have you ever done a story that surprised you?
Ooh.
I ask all the good questions.
I know. I think surprise... I think the way I would put that is, maybe I think people would be surprised about some of the coach, you know, some of the longtime coaches around here, and you know, Jim Roth is at 499 wins, the first Pennsylvania coach to win 500 wins early next season. You know, you would think somebody like that would have a mystique about him, but he's one of the nicest and easiest people that you have to deal with. You know, George Curry always got a bad rap, you know, and what little I got to deal with him, he was one of the easier and nicest people. Now, granted, you had to catch him at the right time, but still.
Right. No, I saw George a lot at Penn State football practices. I can't say enough good things about him.
And the, you know, another person is, you know, I would probably say from the late 90s to the mid 2000s, I got a chance to do a lot of Penn State basketball and Penn State football, but I never felt confident to be the one that, you know, to raise my hand and ask a question, but just from afar watching Coach Paterno just kind of handle things, and, you know, he kind of always got a, you know, from afar it seemed like he would be a brusque and somebody tough to deal with, but I always found him to be, you know, just accommodating, and I used to enjoy, you know, sometimes it used to get a little out of hand. I'm sure you know this and have seen it, but I used to enjoy the give and take sometimes between Dave Jones and him. That used to be the most entertaining part of some of those press conferences.
Yeah, it happened. Now, obviously, I'm at a different spot, but to be frank with you, Joe and I never won. I mean, I'm talking 32 years, never had a crossword. Never. You know? You know, the key was to go in and be as efficient as possible, try to ask as many good questions as possible, and make sure you're not wasting anybody's time, and you go from there. And I think that that makes a big difference. Makes a big difference. No, I just thought I'd ask you some questions about the about all this, because I think it's a fascinating topic. You've been in the business so long.
The summer before my senior year of high school.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Can you believe how long you've been able to stay in this, especially with all the twists and turns that you're still in it?
The one that I can't believe is I really thought the COVID shutdown would probably be the end of not just us as a local paper, but most local papers. And, you know, most of us have survived and most of us are still around. And I think that's, you know, there is a spot for local newspapers. And when somebody figures out a way to keep the local newspaper alive on the internet and for people to, I think that's where you're going to make, and somebody's going to figure this out and make their money.
Yeah. Well, that's the key. Can they, you know, it's always about the way to figure out making money. Because I know, for example, we've had John Sauber on from the Center Daily Times. John does a terrific job, excellent job. But there are days where you go over to Sheets or Rudders or whatever it may be, and you see the paper there, and you feel like the paper is like, you know, it's not quite a pamphlet, but it certainly has less meat to it.
I mean, look at some of the. I'm sure you're aware of this. So look at some of the decisions they've had to make. You know, they don't really cover local high school sports anymore. They concentrate on Penn State. I mean,
they don't put out a Saturday paper.
Well, we're the only one in our chain, CNHI, that produces a paper. We're 6 days a week. Most places are 5 days a week. And I mean, look at the company that owns the PennLive.com now. I think the Patriots only 3 days a week.
Yes, they're three. You know, it's amazing because I texted Neil. Neil says, yeah, honestly, not surprising. They canned my boss last week. He was the general manager, kind of figured that I was next. Didn't think they'd shutter the entire company. But they operated $10 million in the red year after year. Eventually something's going to happen. Yeah. Well, Neil will get something. Well, you know, he'll still be a part of this show, considering all the money we pay him.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's going to keep him afloat for a while.
I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. Sports Illustrated is probably one of the reasons that I do this job. I mean, that's a magazine that I used to get when I was a little kid. I mean, Thursdays were a big day in my house. The Sporting News and the Sports Illustrated came.
Yeah, that's what happened in my house all the time. Always got the Sporting News. I got the Sporting News I got long before I got Sports Illustrated. Love the Sporting News.
I miss the team-by-team baseball things in the Sporting News.
Yeah, me too. The Sporting News did lay off some people this week, including Carissa Maxwell, who used to work for us here. So she was part of the layoffs there. She had been at TSN for 6 years. It's such a hard business. I mean, it's become a hard business. And now we're getting hot takes, and yes, there'll be an Adam Schefter. Yes, there'll be Woj, but I mean, they're getting help from the leagues and agents on what they're doing. And I'm not trying to disparage anybody. That's not what I'm trying to do in any way, shape, or form. And the fact that ESPN might be financially together with the NFL as a possibility. Yikes. I mean, that's like, that is stunning in some ways.
Yeah, I saw that. And I mean, the NFL likes to control the message to begin with. If they have ESPN, I don't think you'll ever find out anything bad about the NFL again.
No, you will not. No. It's not going to happen now. I mean, everybody is invested in it. You know, Fox is invested in it. CBS is, NBC, ESPN, ABC, Prime Video. Who's left? I mean, And everybody wants to carry it. If I'm running the network, I need to have the NFL on. I mean, so I'm bidding, and I want to carry it.
And, you know, I guess it's, you know, like everything else, money rules. And right now, you know, the NFL is one of the only things that right now that is printing money as at their will almost.
Well, you're going to have this weekend big numbers TV-wise, especially for the Chiefs-Bills game. There's going to be gigantic numbers. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my two favorites. Indeed, second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. Yeah, I mean, they took Sports Illustrated today and completely shut it down. I mean, every element of it. In a not just the magazine, but like online, everything that goes with it. I mean, they are done.
I think I read whoever owns the actual brand name of Sports Illustrated is still going to keep it alive to sell T-shirts and such things.
Oh, the, you know, that won't do much for the guys that wrote for it.
No, not at all.
All right.
But apparently somebody owns the actual name of Sports Illustrated and then allowed whoever just shut it down to take the lease, the name, and the lease of the name ran out.
Authentic Brands Group revoked Arena Group's license to operate. So they said on Thursday, the 18th, that would be yesterday, of course, we were notified by Authentic Brands Group that the license under which the Arena Group operates Sports Illustrated brand and SI-related properties has been officially revoked by ABG, that's Authentic Brands Group. As a result of this license revocation, we will be laying off staff that work on the SI brand. All impacted employees will receive severance pay and will be entitled to any applicable warn or notice period outlined in the union agreement. Some employees will be terminated immediately and paid in lieu of the application notice. Wonderful. Let's see. We appreciate the work and efforts and blah, blah, blah. I'm glad you appreciate it. How about a job? No? Not the best way to do it?
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, they usually doesn't work out that way.
No, it does not. And what's always interesting in the situations like this, management is all the power. I mean, there will be people that will get laid off in this industry, and there will be a groundswell and a storm of support for the person that was on the wrong end of that was on the wrong end of it. And it still doesn't matter. They're going to do whatever they darn well please. They're just going to do it because they have the power. They're the management. They can do it. And that's, right? I mean, they received thousands of letters, like, okay, or thousands of emails, whatever. They're not going to change their minds. I would say the odds of them changing their minds would be about 1 in 50. How about that?
That might even probably be generous.
1 in 100?
Yeah. Honestly, probably the only way is if they have somebody that's going to pay them enough money to pay whatever the other company was paying them for the name. Probably much more.
Right, yeah. It's just... and it can upset fan bases, which it does, and you can go en masse and tell them what you think, but it's not like 99 out of 100. Like, they're not even reading it. How about that?
That's probably a good bet. It's kind of like the Athletic thing where they, you know, they thought they were going to make a go with it with team-specific and town-specific sites, and, you know, that went by the wayside for the most part this past spring and summer, too.
Well, the Athletic, to me, is critical in all this.
Yes.
Because if they can't make it, and the New York Times owns them right now, if they can't make it, the entire sports journalistic industry is in deep trouble. Because I feel like, and I've said this on the show, so this is not out of turn, it's not something I came up with now, blah, blah. You know. It is, to me, the last line in the sand for sports journalism. If they can't make it, then the odds of it get flushed. That's my opinion.
And you know, it just might come down, you know, to what I think it's Greg Bernard and Dejan Kovac, who has the Pittsburgh site. It might just come down to somebody starting city-specific sites and hoping that works out.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see how it plays out. And by the way, the Peacock wildcard broadcast drew 23 million. 23 million. Including you and me.
But 7 million less, I think, than the next lowest one.
Wow. How about that?